it's Mr. Irrelevant. I'm Josh DiMaggio today in for the birthday boy, the birthday bozo, as I called him, Alex Stroff. And it was a big weekend for the young man. All three of the members of this show did attend this surprise birthday gathering in the city of Milwaukee following the Wisconsin Badgers loss to Marquette. I showed up around 6:30 p.m. to the special Alex Stroff celebration. I did see young Will there. I saw Alex Stroff, who looked as if he had been celebrating his birthday since about 11 a.m., like everyone else in the room. Hunter, I did only stay for about an hour, and the time to leave, to me, approached when everybody in the crowd, now there's many teammates there, many friends of Alex Stroff, they all started doing the Soulja Boy crank that dance in the middle of this big bar. And that, to me, as somebody who was on his second beer of the day while I was being there, decided, you know what, this is probably time for me to go. How was your experience at the Alex Stroff birthday extravaganza?
It was good. I got there right after the Wisconsin Marquette game, so we're talking 3:30 somewhere in that window. Things were good. It was just one of those where you hit a point if you're not a big, like, large gathering kind of person, and I'm not, whereas just like I said to my wife, I'm like, do you want to move up our dinner reservation a little bit? Like, I love Stroff, but I'm just like, I'm good. We had a couple drinks, talked to some people. And it's like, know what? Maybe it's time to move that puppy up a little bit sooner than we expected. I love Stroff, but he is such a, I need all of the attention in the world on me.
Yes.
He sent an email to our team administrator, asking for a birthday questionnaire that gets sent out to the entire office to be sent to the Madison one as well. He's not a Madison teammate anymore. On the books, he is 100% Milwaukee. But he needed both Milwaukee and Madison to know that it was his birthday on Saturday, and this is what he wants everyone to know about him for his birthday. Like, dude just needs the attention, and it just gets a little excessive sometimes.
That is what just makes him the absolute best. He has a show, Mr. Irrelevant, that he is the star on. He does. He's on KBN as well. He also fills in all over the board on the Homer Hour. He'll be in on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, which I produce later this week. And he's obviously on the Green Bay Game Day pregame show. So there's a lot of Alex Stroff to go around out there, and he's still looking for more. The funny thing is, and not to speak illy of our great teammates around here, but when I get that questionnaire, I like dread it, and I just kind of do it as a reflexive thing, as this is probably nice to do for our team. But for those, he's like, can you please send it out? Which is the most Alex Stroff thing ever, and also a Ben Brust thing. Him and Ben Brust share their birthday guys. You know, they might be Stroff approaching his 30s, Ben into his 30s. They might be that age where you'd think they'd be past that, but they're still birthday guys. And I do laugh at them, but of all things that could be, birthday guys aren't the worst, I think, despite it being kind of annoying and childish. What do you think?
Yeah, like, being a birthday guy, like, it's something you just kind of, if you're in the orbit of someone that is a birthday guy, you deal with it for like a day or two leading up, the day of especially, and then maybe the next day, or in this case, since it was a Saturday, that next Monday. And then it's over with and it's done until he comes on Wednesday and he's going to complain about us making fun of him because he is very soft. So, like, that's, you know, all we have to really deal with there, and then it's over with. There's other types of people where if they really want the attention on them, it's exhausting all the time. Stroff isn't one of those people. I don't want anyone to get confused about what I'm saying about him. It's just when it's his birthday, he's got to make sure that you know it's his birthday.
Yeah, he was a pig and bleep on Saturday when I saw him, that couldn't be happier. All those people were there for him. And it is nice to see people who care about you. I didn't show up until about 6:30. That might have been a strategic mistake. I don't know. how much conversation me and young Will talked probably the most out of everyone there, because everyone was just kind of doing their own thing. But no more time on Alex Drove. He's not here today. It's our show, Hunter. We're going to talk about what we want to and how we want to. And I want to move on to our first topic of the day. With a win for the Minnesota Vikings yesterday, the Green Bay Packers are basically dead in the water when it comes to winning the division. I was somebody who even 3-4 weeks ago had sort of given up hope on the Packers winning the division. I think the Lions are that good. They're playing that well. And even with a game to be had, a game we actually ended up, the Packers ended up losing. To me, it felt like we were going to be looking at a wild card berth for the team, which in a historic NFC North, if you look at the teams they have played and the teams they've all beaten and where a lot of the losses come for many, the three of the Packers' four losses this season have been to the two teams ahead of them in the NFC North. If those teams weren't good teams, it'd be something to worry about. But right now, the top four teams in the NFC figure to be the Lions, the Eagles, the Vikings, and the Packers. I'm still a little bit of a doubter. I know Wilde and Tausch spent a lot of time talking about the Minnesota Vikings, and are they better than the Packers, or are they just playing better than the Packers? How will that end up at the end of the year? Right now, the Vikings are better. I think the Packers have a chance to beat them in their upcoming game against them in a couple weeks. But right now, as things shake out with the way the Vikings have performed and beating the Packers, they are the better team. Their record shows it as such. What is interesting to me is this is a unique situation. Most teams who are 9-4 at this point in the season are very much still looking to be alive in their division and win the division. The Packers at this point, all they're really fighting for is not to end up as the seventh seed in the playoffs for the wild card, because I don't think anybody wants to be playing the Philadelphia Eagles at home. If you can manage to get a fifth or sixth position, you'll end up playing one of the NFC West teams or the NFC South teams. There's some good teams out there, some frisky teams, but there's a clear line that's drawn at that fourth mark where you feel pretty good about beating the Buccaneers or the Falcons. You feel pretty good about, and I don't even want to say with the NFC West, I think it's going to come down to Rams and Seahawks, with the Packers obviously facing the Seahawks this upcoming week. A game you can kind of set the record straight on, but there's not a whole lot to play for. And it's going to be interesting to see how Matt LaFleur navigates those waters, because fighting for a fifth or sixth seed versus the seventh seed isn't the same motivation as fighting for winning the division, fighting for the first seed, the number one seed overall, and the bye. I do think you can invigorate the team by saying, hey, this is a team we might end up playing this week in the Seahawks later in the season. Let's like kill their hope. Let's show them that we are better than all the teams in the NFC West. And then you also might be able to play off of, hey, let's ruin the Vikings. Let's make sure the Vikings end up in a worse spot or end up behind the Packers and make them not want to have to see us again in the playoffs. The incentive has changed, but I still think there's plenty, because I don't think any member of the Packers after Thursday night's game, of which I was at JRAD and not actually watching the game. I did go back. Thank you, Game Neitzel, for giving me your NFL login so I could watch the game back on my own time. That was interesting, Hunter. I do want to take a quick digression here. How would you feel at a concert? And this happened to me at a concert where one of the people behind you would be one of the people behind you has the game on their phone, which that's fine. Phones are out at concerts, whatever, but they didn't turn the volume off. So as I was listening to the band, I could hear the faint mumbles of Al Michaels behind me. And I didn't know if I'd be a real buzzkill and a not nice guy if I were to turn around and say, hey, can you just turn the volume off of that? Where do you stand on that?
So I don't think I would have said anything. I don't know. So I had a slightly similar thing happen to me once before, and I didn't do anything about it, but it still drives me crazy to this day. So maybe I'm going to say you should. I'm processing this now in real time. Yes, you should have said something. My situation was driving back from a Division III UW Oshkosh postseason game when Wisconsin was playing Penn State in the Big Ten championship game. And the audio stream that I had playing in the car was behind the guy that I was there with streaming the game on his phone. And he didn't turn the volume down. And I'm like, dude, I'm driving 70 on the interstate. There is nothing else I can do. I can't watch the game with you. And I didn't say anything. So I knew what was happening before it was going to happen. And I should have said something because it like still bothers me. Yeah. You got to say something. Also, like, since you live in the Milwaukee market, do you not have like YouTube TV? And then you can just like record that way instead?
I do not have YouTube TV. I have all the streaming services and the over-the-air cable. So I was able to, one of the people behind me, in front of me, was actually one of my friends, and he had kind of propped up his phone. So, like, I watched the entirety of the last drive. I saw the Tucker Kraft touchdown. I saw the Keyshawn Nixon interception. But I wasn't locked in. Like, obviously, we need to be here as we're going to be talking about these games and the Packers team week in and week out. So, I had consumed a few Door County beverages, as I'm known to do, and said, you know what? I want to go back and watch the whole thing and watch it with a clearer mind. That was my mindset. But yeah, the concert we were at was a Grateful Dead cover band. It's pretty informal. It's very loud. So it didn't by any means ruin my, experience. I did just find it quite, not to be too harsh, but like disrespectful to the people around you. Like, not everybody is a Packers fan. So having to listen to Al Michaels talk about the first half of the Packers game is kind of like, all right, that's a little bit odd. I did not elect to say anything. There were at multiple times throughout the game where, because we were not the only groups that had the game on their Amazon Prime, there were multiple times where a cheer broke out in the middle of the concert, but it was a little more hushed, but people were obviously watching the game on their phones as well, which was a pretty unique scenario for me as somebody who pretty much doesn't do anything when it comes to Packers games. So being out in the wild and watching those people listening to a Grateful Dead cover band also do it was interesting. But when it comes to the Packers, the season isn't over. There is still a better form of this team. I don't think anybody on the team thinks they played their best game against the Detroit Lions on Thursday. I don't think anyone on that team thinks they've even seen the best version of the Packers. You could make a case for the San Francisco game or the Arizona game being close to those performances, but to this point, the Packers still have a lot to prove. You want to be playing your best football later in the season. Obviously, it was a setback for the Packers to lose to the Lions, but I didn't find myself overly discouraged. And I think the mindset of we want to play the Detroit Lions again for a third time because we think we can beat you. That's basically where they have to shift their mindset. They can't let any 1 week get away from them. They still have to go out and take care of business in a weekly, on a week-to-week basis, but you have to remind yourself you're playing for something bigger, and the only way you get there is playing well to end the season. Now, this next topic is going to be something that comes as no surprise to anybody who's ever heard me talk on the ESPN Wisconsin airwaves. It's got a little to do with my boy, Aaron Rodgers. Yesterday, the New York Jets solidified their 14th consecutive season of not making the playoffs. Now, that is the worst in the NFL, but it's even worse than that, Hunter. It is the worst in all of American professional sports. Oof. If you are an NHL, NBA, MLB, or NFL team, your team has made the playoffs at least once since the Jets were last in the playoffs. Now, if we all remember, there's someone quite famous there, the Enigma, as he has donned and named himself, Aaron Rodgers. He was asked in the post game what he thought of the 14-year drought. Aaron Rodgers first bristled at the question and said, well, is there a question there? Because it wasn't phrased the correct way. He then said, well, I was only here for 1 year as a starter, and I'm a little disappointed. And that is the cherry on top to Aaron Rodgers' career and the late form stages of that career. When given the ability to say the right thing, to say something along the lines of, I came to New York because all the talent on this team and because I thought I had more left in the tank. My goal was to make the playoffs and to make a deep run in the playoffs, and I've failed at that this season. I'm disappointed for myself, my teammates, and all the New York Jets fans. Instead, Aaron Rodgers said, well, I've only been here 1 year as a starter, so it's not my fault. It is the perfect encapsulation of Aaron Rodgers in this late form of his career. Whenever it comes to the point of taking accountability, of bearing the brunt of the blame, he finds a way to either wiggle his way out of there or to also implicate other people in that. I think as Packers fans, we need to be thrilled that Brian Gutekunst had the gumption to draft Aaron Rodgers, to let Aaron Rodgers go along his way. And you could say Aaron Rodgers wasn't going to come back, but Brian Gutekunst did enough things where I'll say he made it pretty clear that he no longer wanted Aaron Rodgers around either. The relationship had gotten to a point through the moves of one man who runs the Packers organization and the general manager deciding, I'm not going to let Aaron Rodgers dictate how I build this team, how I think and what I think is in the best interest of the Green Bay Packers organization. That is diametrically opposed to what Aaron Rodgers thought. We all remember the 30-minute press conference after his brief little holdout where Aaron Rodgers said, I need to be part of the decisions. He wanted to be more like Tom Brady. He wanted to be able to keep some of the veterans around that were important to the locker room. Well, then Aaron Rodgers went to the Jets and we saw the full-fledged Aaron Rodgers operation. We saw him get everything he wanted to a T. Nathaniel Hackett, Randall Cobb, Alan Lazard, Davante Adams. You just run down the list of things Aaron Rodgers wanted and got, and now we look at the result of the season. It is historically disappointing. He had a coach fired, his head coach fired. He had a GM fired, and now another year of ineptitude for the New York Giants. Now, you can point to, well, it's the Jets. There's something in the water there. It's sort of similar to the same way we talk about the Chicago Bears. Shout out young intern Will, who gave me a look when I said that as I fired a ricochet shot at the Bears for absolutely no reason. But Aaron Rodgers is a factor in that. Aaron Rodgers isn't the same quarterback he was when he last won an MVP. He clearly doesn't like getting hit. He clearly doesn't have the same mobility following the Achilles injury. All of those things contribute. And some of them are out of Aaron Rodgers' control, of course. Obviously, having an intact and not rehabbed Achilles would probably help him out. But the waning skills we saw in his last year with the Packers, when they lost to Detroit in a game to get into the playoffs, where Aaron Rodgers just didn't have it in him. And now he's having to face the music. And what does he do when he's told to face the music? He runs away from it. Earlier today on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, we asked Rob Domofsky about Aaron Rodgers and what he thinks about Aaron Rodgers' future in the NFL. Here is that clip now.
Will he be on an NFL roster next season?
I'm going to say no. And I'm going to say that I know it only takes one team, right? There's 32 of them and it only takes one. But I'm going to say that the league retires him. But that he paints it as, you know, it's his choice.
I absolutely love that clip there from our friend Rob Domofsky, the ESPN NFL Nation writer. I've long held the belief, and this probably dates back 6-7 weeks ago at this point, that Aaron Rodgers was not going to return next year, that he was going to retire. But I thought he was going to do it on his own. But I think Rob Domofsky is onto something. that Aaron Rodgers and his competitive nature is going to want to continue to play, because he does not want his Hall of Fame career, which we all know he's going to end up as, most likely first ballot, really almost unanimous. Would be surprised if it wasn't unanimous, that Aaron Rodgers is going to back channel trying to find a home. But what Aaron Rodgers is going to find is none of those teams want to get in the business of Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers' skills are waning. Aaron Rodgers requires a lot when it comes to starting quarterback. He demands a lot of his coaches, of his players, of his teammates, of all those things. And I think that Aaron Rodgers is going to find crickets when he goes into the open market. Because who, as we saw with that clip, I was only starter for 1 year, wants to bring that into their franchise. They want that to be their leader. Aaron Rodgers sucked up all the air in New York. And what they got for it was him saying, it's not my fault. I was only here 1 year. There's only so much I can do, while demanding everything from the New York Jets. Hunter, what do you make of what Rob said and Aaron Rodgers' future in the NFL?
I mean, right away I went to the ESPN app and I'm like, I just need to actually see like the NFL and by division and like all of the teams. And I'm trying to figure out like who would actually like need a quarterback. And it would make sense, like, okay, a veteran quarterback that gets them over the hump. They're suddenly a different team with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback and they're actually a playoff team. But like the AFC East, obviously not. Like, the Patriots are more than a quarterback away.
Yeah.
AFC North, the Browns are more than a quarterback away. The Bengals have their guy. The Steelers are fine. Like, whatever.
Yep.
The South, same thing. Jacksonville probably has their guy with Lawrence, at least for now. Yep. I mean, he just got that contract. Tennessee's more than a quarterback away. The West, Raiders are more than a quarterback away. NFC, it's the same thing. Like, he's not going to the other New York team. The Bears aren't doing it.
Not going to the Panthers.
Yeah. Like, there is nowhere else for him to go and actually be the guy. So, I think Rob's right. It's either that or somehow the Jets bring him back, which would be a very Jets thing for them to do. But it's also, like, when he... If you're in leadership and you hear the guy that's supposed to be the leader for your team say, like, just being like, no, it's not really on me. The rest of it, that's all on them. Like, dude, you're a member of the team now. Whether you like it or not, you're a part of the history of what that team was.
Yep.
And you need to also say, hey, we didn't do enough. I wasn't good enough to get that to end. Like, that's all he has to say. But he can't do it because he's incapable of actually saying that he could be part of a problem.
Yeah, and that has been, and that was largely a lot of my concern when it came to Aaron Rodgers and his time in Green Bay. Now, obviously, I can't say I do and have tried to say I was right about everything, but this played out far worse than I even expected in New York. I thought they'd be a wild card team. Yes, a wild card team. They win some games. You see stretches of greatness from Aaron Rodgers, but not enough to make them like a division winner or one of the like leading teams in the NFL. I thought they'd get more from him. When you think back on his 2024, none of it really has to do with his play other than that Hail Mary, which was the best part of the Jets season, was having to fight and claw to win games. It has been nothing but a disaster. And it's going to continue to be a disaster. I don't think there's any chance the New York Jets want him back. There's already reports coming out of there about they trying to get him benched. That was weeks and weeks ago at this point. Obviously, the relationship with Woody Johnson from Johnson & Johnson is not where it should be. And I just can't see any reason he ends up back. And I think the next job Aaron Rodgers has is probably going to be podcast host or spiritual liaison or spiritual guidance counselor. Because I don't think football's in it anymore for Aaron Rodgers. I do want to talk about here about one of our great sponsors. That's Door County Distillery, which brings you this show three times a week. Locally produced, handcrafted, and award-winning spirits. That's Door County Distillery. Made locally in beautiful Door County. If you're heading to Door County, make sure to stop by for tours, tastings, and exclusive products, in Carlsville. Bring Door County to you. Affordable, local, and delicious. Door County Distilleries, vodkas, brandies, rums, and whiskeys are available wherever great liquor is sold. Tailgating, having a fire, or just kicking your feet up? Do it with Door County Distillery. Visit DoorCountyDistillery.com. Let's toss it over to Alex Strolf and his wonderful cocktail-making video here that we see every time. This is Mr. Irrelevant.
Back at Door County Distillery, the New Year's coming up, so we're going to celebrate in style, making the final countdown with our buddy Rob from Door County Distillery. Rob, happy early New Year.
Yeah, happy early New Year to you, too. Do you have any resolutions coming up?
I've got many, but we shouldn't get into those now. We only have 60 seconds. We've got the 20 at least time award-winning single malt whiskey headlining this lineup. How do we make the final countdown?
All right, so you start with, as you said, the award-winning whiskey, single malt. 2.5 ounces of that, 1/2 ounce of grenadine, 1/2 ounce of simple syrup, 3/4 ounce of lime juice. Stir, stay on the outside of the glass, give her a little once over around.
Happy New Year to you, Happy New Year to you,
Happy
Rob.
Happy New Year's,
the
cheers.
The final countdown from Door County Distillery. Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Check out their website with a huge list of unique cocktail recipes at DoorCountyDistillery.com. That's DoorCountyDistillery.com.
I just love that video of Alex Strolf. He is somebody who's on camera a lot. Feels a little awkward in that video, doesn't he? Like, just be natural. He's making your cocktail. Enjoy it. I know he had a lot of them over the weekend, Door Counties. I did myself as well. So it was... it was a good weekend for the Mr. Irrelevant crew and the Door County. Having ourselves all, I can't believe they talk about New Year's in there. Has this been the fastest December in the history of Decembers?
I mean, we are only 9 days in. So, like, there's still a lot of the month to go.
It feels like it's almost over. They're talking about New Year's.
That's because, like, half the month is, like, holiday time then, so it's, like, you're kind of mentally checked out. So, yeah, it does feel like the month's almost over.
Yeah, before you know it, we're going to get into the, well, I have the day off, I'm taking an extra day off. Next thing you know, it's the 3rd of January when you look up going, wow, oh, what happened?
I've already warned Strolf about this because of how crazy the football season is. I'm taking like a sabbatical starting the 20th, and I won't be back until January 2nd. I'm using six vacation days, and I'm getting a huge chunk off. I love it. It's going to be the best.
I love that for you. Love that for you, Hunter. Love that for you. Let's move on to our next conversation. This one stemmed from something I saw on the internet over the weekend. It was basically focused on Jaden Reed in the game against the Lions only having one target, zero receptions, and only 25 snaps. The snap count thing was the thing that sort of made me raise my eyebrows. Obviously, I watched the game and I was able to see it doesn't feel like a whole lot of Jaden Reed in this game. The conversation I want to have today is a conversation we spent, 50% of the offseason, Hunter, talking about, and that's the
close
number 1
60,
wide
yeah.
receiver. I do want to say, though, as much as it felt like we did it constantly, I think we're vindicated now with the way the season's played out. Because right now, the Packers clearly lack a number 1 wide receiver, and they would clearly benefit from having that number 1 wide receiver. We thought the answer was Jaden Reed when the season first started. He had some impressive showings. And I expect him probably to have a couple more of those. Then there was the Romeo Doubs thing where he was playing the most snaps, but not seeing necessarily the most amount of targets or the most amount of usage, which led to Romeo Doubs then disappearing from the team for a week, getting suspended for conduct detrimental. And now he's injured, which you can only do so much about that. I hope he does get well soon, seeing as he's missed multiple weeks now for a concussion. But I think the conversation we had and the one key factor that we can look at is the Packers' inefficiency on third down. The Packers have had an issue the past few weeks of sustaining drives. Now, part of that is the Packers can take big chunk plays away from you. They also turn the ball over. So they're not going to have long sustained drives. But the problem is the third down efficiency is not where you want it to be. As we saw against the Lions, they went punt, punt, I believe fumble. And those were all quick drives. A number one wide receiver, as somebody who we watched, Devontae Adams, Jordy Nelson, Greg Jennings, Donald Driver, a number one wide receiver is the guy you look to on third down. You saw the Lions do it all yesterday. You saw guys that have just extremely high target totals and reception totals, guys like Jordan Addison, guys like Justin Jefferson, just guys that can be relied on. And the Packers right now don't have a guy week in and week out who's going to get open and consistently make plays and be the guy who leads the team in targets. I believe I looked it up, and Jaden Reed was somewhere around 70th in the NFL in total targets, followed shortly behind by Dontavian Wicks. There isn't a guy that has separated himself so clearly in the Packers wide receiver core. I'm not really willing to give up on any of those top four as maybe possibly emerging, but I do think we need to recalibrate. We need to think to ourselves, do we believe in Dontavian Wicks to fix the drop issues, to become a more reliable third down option, to always be on the field? Is it Christian Watson, who had a nice showing against the Detroit Lions? Is it Romeo Doubs? Do you trust him? And could it be Jaden Reed? Jaden Reed suffers from man coverage. When he is playing against teams that predominantly run man-to-man versus zone, he struggles. And what that tells you is he struggles getting off the line of scrimmage, and he struggles just beating his man man-to-man. Dontavian Wicks continues to be one of the best wide receivers in all of the NFL. You name him, he's probably better than him at getting open, which is half the battle. The problem is the other half, the catching, doesn't really work out in Dontavian Wicks' favor. Christian Watson is a physical specimen, a guy who's been up and down, a guy who had a fumble, a guy who's had some big drops, but a guy who can also single-handedly turn the game on its head. I don't think Christian Watson's ever going to fully emerge as a wide receiver one. I do think he could be a high-end wide receiver two, a big difference maker, a big play guy. But the Packers need somebody that Jordan Love can look to, like we remember Aaron Rodgers doing with Jordy Nelson, with Devontae Adams, be it the back shoulders or the slants or whatever it is the guy who's going to get open. I remember the Packers had like 30 seconds left to try and go win a game, and Aaron Rodgers threw it to Devontae Adams three times in a row, and everyone in the stadium knew that was going to happen, but they had no answer for it. And right now, it feels like Jordan Love needs to pull off a miracle and use all of his guys to get downfield and just hope someone's there to make the play. I think the Packers probably need to invest in a wide receiver, be it through the draft or be it through free agency. I don't see a guy like T. Higgins being an option for the Packers. I certainly think they are more likely to continue the process of drafting and developing. I know we felt good about Malik Heath and all those guys behind Dontavian Wicks there on the depth chart, but those guys have sort of figured to be what they're going to be. They are role players who, unless called on, probably aren't going to factor much into a game. Hunter, do you think, and would you want, if you were a Packers fan, the Packers to invest more in that wide receiver position because of the results of this year? Obviously, Josh Jacobs has become the standard bearer on offense. Tucker Kraft is what he is and is going to continue to probably grow into his position, but there still seems to be a whole bunch of wide receiver twos and maybe threes on the Packers roster right now.
Yeah, and like, part of it for me was when I was watching the Vikings game, and I understand that like you're not going to get a Justin Jefferson, like he's the best receiver in the league,
sure aren't.
But he's at least somebody that is good enough to be able to have defenses say, we've got to put a safety over the top of him. Like, we need extra guys in coverage, because then Jordan Addison went off. He's not a number one. But because of the attention that Justin Jefferson gets, you're opening things up for other guys. So then I think that makes things easier for somebody like a Jaden Reed. Like, I just feel like they need somebody else that, even if they aren't talent-wise up there, somebody that, like you said, Jordan Love's going to so much that defenses are paying attention to it, and it's forcing things to then happen on the defensive side of, like, oh, that's opening this up because they have to pay so much attention to somebody else. Like, that could do wonders for this offense in a way that I just feel like this, okay, we're going to spread it around. You don't know where it's coming from. Yeah, well, I don't think the offense always knows where the production is coming from, and if you're trying to figure that out week in and week out at the receiver position, you can have slow starts on offense, and suddenly against a good team like the Lions, you're down early and you have to come back to try and make it a game. And that's not going to help you beat good teams who the Lions know exactly who they're going to go to when they have to throw the ball.
Yeah.
The Vikings know exactly who they're going to go to. The Chiefs, as awful as their offense has been at times, they know exactly who they're going to go to on offense in big moments. You need that player, and the Packers just don't have it.
Yeah, the interesting thing, that the two teams that you really always mention, they're obviously division rivals, but it's the Lions and the Vikings. The interesting thing is both the Lions wide receiver twos were guys drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. The interesting thing is Amon-Ra St. Brown wasn't actually a first-round pick, but is playing much like one. He was a fourth-round pick in 2021, a guy everybody seemed to love coming out of college, and then proved himself on the field. Justin Jefferson, obviously, was one of Aaron Rodgers, to bring it back to the guy we talked about just before, favorite picks on that draft, but he went before the Packers actually ended up picking. The Packers have invested via the draft in talent. The problem is it's not a lot of premium talent. A lot of those premium positions go to positions like the offensive line, defensive line, cornerbacks. And even in recent history, the linebacking position, which is sort of how the Packers have always built that team. I do think a true wide receiver one would change everything for this Packers offense. I think it would make it more cohesive. It would help sustain drives. And it would, frankly, like Justin Jefferson, I don't know if anyone watched that game yesterday, sometimes he makes plays that he just shouldn't. And I don't know if there's many Packers that you trust to do that same thing, where the ball's in a spot where maybe it's not the best throw, but Justin Jefferson is so supernaturally talented, he's going to make that play. I would say the same of guys like Jordan Addison, guys like Jameson Williams, but in a little bit different way. Those guys create more with what they're given than, say, someone like Jaden Reed is right now, or Christian Watson. I think the wide receiver position is going to be something the Packers do invest in. It'll just be interesting to see where that comes from. Because if we remember some of those great picks for the Packers, and obviously none of them were ever first round picks at the wide receiver position. Anybody who's followed the Packers has paid attention to that fact for a long time. But guys like Jordy Nelson, Donald Driver, Devontae Adams, James Jones, those all were guys who at different points of their careers were functioning as wide receiver ones, sometimes due to injury, or sometimes just because they were simply that damn good. And that's been a big difference. We all talked about what a benefit it was and how hard it was to game plan for other teams. It seems like it might be a little difficult to Matt LaFleur to game plan, though, too, because why on earth is a guy we've seen make so many plays, Jaden Reed, simply having one target and zero touches in a game against a division opponent in a game you must absolutely win? Obviously, the Packers found an advantage in running against the depleted Detroit Lions defense, but it still wasn't enough. You would have loved to get points out of those first three drives, and you failed to do it.
So I think we might have just, something you said there, I think we might have stumbled into a potential problem for Matt LaFleur. You remember last year with Aaron Jones, how many times we talked about, like, why is he not getting more touches? Why isn't he getting enough touches? Now it's shifting to, there's just random times where Jaden Reed just isn't getting targets. He's not, like, they're not using him. He's not on the field. Like, it feels like Matt LaFleur, like, gets afraid to use, or I don't know the best word to use, to say, like, he just doesn't use the guys he has and these potential weapons as much as other play callers do. And I think it's hurting the team. Like, we saw it last year with Aaron Jones, and now I think we're seeing it with Reed.
Yeah, I think what ends up happening here, and we've seen it at the second half of the season for the Packers, is Matt LaFleur, what he ends up doing is figuring out what matchups he likes. Like last week, it was obviously he wanted Tucker Kraft to be a big part and Josh Jacobs to be a big part. Last year, remember, how many 100-yard rushing games did Aaron Jones have where when it comes, push comes to shove, Matt LaFleur kind of picks his guys and lets the rest of them just kind of do what they're going to do. The difference is, a guy like Davante Adams, you don't really need to game plan much for him. He's going to be on the field, he's going to get open, and he's going to make plays. Same thing goes for Justin Jefferson. But a guy like Jaden Reed, who struggles against man-to-man coverage, who sometimes needs some of those manufactured touches in a gadget-type sense, be it an end-around or a rushing attack, you have to consciously make them a part of the offense. The Packers are extremely low. I believe they're like 27th in plays run on offense, which is a number that simply has to change. A number that can be changed, though, if you start converting some third downs and extending drives and finding somebody to rely on. You love what you see from Josh Jacobs and Tucker Kraft, and I by no means want them to see the ball less. But somebody's got to step up so everyone else can keep getting more and more opportunities. The Packers are as balanced of a team as you could possibly be in the NFL. The problem is they either score fast or a drive goes three and out or four or five plays and out. Like it, there isn't a lot there. They've been set back because of the sloppiness of the team, be it penalties, be it drops, be it all sorts of things. There's a big confluence of things here that I think Matt LaFleur is trying to find the right recipe. How do I keep my guys on the field for as long as possible? How do I sustain drives? How do I score more points? And right now, he hasn't found the right recipe. The Packers are still averaging 30 points a game, but you would like to help your defense out. Give them a little bit of a rest. Sustain a drive here. Let's give the defense a blow after they might have just forced a big third down out here. There's a lot of factors that go hand in hand that the Packers really just haven't found the correct recipe to. Now, when it comes to Matt LaFleur, I'm going to believe in him as much as anybody else. Let's move on here to a little stock up, stock down. I've got a few guys that I'm excited about, a few guys that I think are playing well. I'm going to start it off in a pretty obvious spot here. I think Jordan Love's stock is up. Now, you might be saying, what do you mean, Jordan Love, stock up? Jordan Love hasn't thrown an interception in quite some time. That's a positive. Jordan Love is also being graded out week to week as one of the higher performing quarterbacks. We've seen a slight increase in the completion percentage. We've seen him make some deep passes. And we've seen a guy who, once he's gotten healthy, has continued to improve, who's continued to look more and more the part. I definitely don't think we're near the ceiling of Jordan Love or that he's necessarily even playing as well as he did at the second half of last season. But Jordan Love's stock, to me, is reaching a higher point. Stock down. Now, this one is a guy who's been a pariah of sorts, and that's Josh Myers. The play, I believe he got a 0.0 pass block grade last week, Hunter.
Oof.
Basically, you could have just lined up anybody out there,
and
it would have been it would have resulted in a similar result. Josh Myers, I thought, had played probably his best football up until that point, and he was facing a just absolutely depleted defensive line. And I don't remember the play specifically, but there was a play where Josh Myers, I believe it was like in the first quarter, ended up like 6 yards in the backfield, like in an instant. That kind of stuff can't be happening, especially when the Lions are playing guys that they signed off the street and were supposed to be third, fourth, or fifth options on that defensive line. Josh Myers, to me, is stock down. Another stock up I have is Dontavian Wicks. It wasn't the most exciting game, or even probably Dontavian Wicks' best career game, but he had five targets, and he caught four passes. And where we were with Dontavian Wicks just a few weeks ago, that's a good place to be. He's out there, he's still getting open, and he's starting to catch the ball a little bit more. The other stock down I have is Jaden Reed. Now, I do want to preface this. This doesn't mean I'm out on Jaden Reed, but I think if you only play 25 snaps and have zero touches, your stock has to be down. Would I be shocked if next week, this Sunday, Matt LaFleur ends up with, Matt LaFleur looks at it and says, Jaden Reed, you have eight touches and he scores a touchdown or two? I wouldn't be shocked at that. But anytime one of your best players ends up with zero touches on offense, that to me means stock down. This one I'm excited to talk about. That's Kenny Clark, stock up. Kenny Clark, when I went back and watched, made a bigger impact on the game than I had originally thought when I was watching it at the Grateful Dead cover band's concert and watching pieces of it. Kenny Clark was not only disruptive, but he made some run stops. And quite frankly, Kenny Clark's stock was about as low as anybody's that was a starter on this team. And if Kenny Clark is going to help in the run game as he did so often and even provide a little bit of help in terms of pass rush, that only means good things for the Packers defense. The other stock down, which I think has to be a little bit of caveat, was Javon Bullard. Javon Bullard was clearly picked on in this game. Javon Bullard was also forced into playing positions he wasn't necessarily comfortable with, also while having an injury. So the Lions correctly figured out this guy is not at 100%. He's not playing at the preferred position they would like him to, so let's target him. I believe he had three targets against him, and two of them went for touchdowns in that game. Which I'm not out on him, not ready to sell the ship on him, but it didn't look good for Javon Bullard last week. The other one, stock up, is Keyshawn Nixon. Keyshawn Nixon went from a guy that was just a returner to now he's the most consistent cornerback the Green Bay Packers have. Now that's not necessarily the highest of praises when you look around and look at how Jaire Alexander hasn't been able to stay on a field for the Packers. But that interception was impressive. He's done more than good enough at the outside corner spot where everyone thought he was simply just a slot guy. He got paid, and he's earned his money. I've been impressed with Keyshawn Nixon. I still think they can upgrade from Keyshawn Nixon. But if Eric Stokes had to play more or Carrington Valentine, I don't know how good the Packers' pass defense would be. So that one is another stock up. The last one is Isaiah McDuffie, and this one's pretty simple. I love the way he plays the game, but he can't pass defend. The Packers' middle of the field feels like it has always been an issue, and when it comes to passing into Isaiah McDuffie's zone, just know they're probably going to catch it, and it's probably going to go for a big game. It's clearly not his game in pass pro, but it is what it is, and Isaiah McDuffie, to me, is stock down. Let's move on over here to a little something that, Hunter, I want to hear your opinion on. That's a college football playoff. Now, my initial reaction to the way the playoff bracket shook out was, I think for the most part, they got the teams right. The one thing I question is, are we doing too much in terms of having these four teams with the bye? The four teams that get the bye are the teams that are the four highest ranked teams that win their conference. Those teams right now aren't the most appealing when you look at it, with Arizona State and Boise State making it in there. Why we have decided those teams are ultimately due to get that bye just comes off as a little strange to me. I understand why you want to incentivize winning your division, but why not take just the best four teams and give them the bye as the committee sees it ranked? Other than that, I don't have an issue with Alabama being out. I think you can make a case for South Carolina deserving to be in. But at some point, we're at 12 teams here, and the 13th, 14th team, I can only feel so bad about.
Yeah, and like, so part of the problem, I think, is that this model was really developed under the idea of like, oh, we're going to have a Pac-12 still. Because you look at the way the bracket is, Oregon wins the Pac-12, go undefeated, they're one of the spots. Then you don't have them winning the Big Ten, so it's Ohio State or Penn State. That's one of the four buys. Like, it just, everything kind of trickles to where it would have made more sense if we actually had another conference and the ACC and Big 12 weren't down this year compared to past years. So I think they're going to change that. The whole you have to be the conference champion to get a bye, like, is stupid because Penn State's still, like, one of the four best teams. And they would have probably still then gotten a bye. I'm fine with it, and I'm just so happy that Alabama didn't get in. Two of their three losses were so bad. They looked terrible at Oklahoma. They looked bad at Vanderbilt. They didn't deserve to get into the playoff. Just because you play in a good conference doesn't suddenly mean that you should be in the playoff. Like, and the college football committee can't punish a team for going to the conference championship game, because then the Big Ten and the ACC would be pissed if suddenly they were just like, well, what's the point of having this game then? Now we're going to lose all this money, because the conferences make so much money on those. So you have to just be like, okay, you played in your conference championship game. Doesn't matter if you lost, you've got to go in. So they were kind of just in a no-win situation there. I'm fine with it. I'm so excited for the 21st. It's going to be one of the best days of football of the year, and I'm going to be driving for a part of that day because we're going to be going to the my mother-in-law's for Christmas on the 21st, but the rest of the day, I already told my wife, I'm watching football. You can help set up. You can help get stuff ready for the Christmas party. I am going to be watching football. I can't miss this day of football. There's going to be four college football games and two NFL games happening that Saturday. Yeah. It's going to be great.
Yeah, looking at these first round matchups here, there's actually a lot of intriguing matchups. And the other thing that I do like is teams like Boise State, SMU, and Arizona State getting their shine. They took care of business the way they can, and now they get a chance to fight the big guys. I don't think it's necessarily going to go good for all of them, but would you be shocked if an SMU beat Penn State? Would you be shocked if a Boise State ended up beating Penn State in that quarterfinal round? I would be shocked if Arizona State did beat either Clemson or Texas. I will say that. But hey, we've seen crazier things happen in college football, and I'm not ruling out any wild outcome here. I do think you're probably going to see an Oregon versus Notre Dame or Georgia, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think the more games, the more interest, the more relevancy for some of these smaller programs, I think is only good for everyone there. Now, if you're in Alabama, you can think you got shafted, that things went wrong for you. But hey, win your games. It's that easy. And I think the teams who are winning the most and playing the best are the teams who all ended up in this 12-team playoff. And that, to me, is good. And as you said, we get a lot more a fun football with a lot of stakes, which I don't think if any college football fan can be mad at.
Yeah, and this is also like, this is really good for the universities, because I love seeing the stat of like schools that make deep runs in like the March Madness, their enrollment from out of state goes up. So like if you're in Arizona State now, like it already has the reputation of being the party school that it is, on par with Wisconsin. But now, oh, they're on national TV. They suddenly start getting more out-of-state enrollment, and that's more money for the schools then, because they make more off of that. So, like, it helps the schools. Like, this is all good. I don't get anybody complaining about it. Unless you're an Alabama fan, I understand being upset. But this is just good for everybody. I'm so excited for it. Like, I'm almost as excited for this being a 12-team playoff as I was for College Football 25 coming out.
And if you know producer Tiny Hands there, that's about as excited as you could possibly get. So that is a ringing endorsement here. Before we get to what we learned, I want to talk about our friends at Underdog Sports. Underdog is a place to play if you're a sports fan looking to win money while watching sports. With over 5 million happy players and 2 billion won, Underdog makes it fun and easy to cash in on all your favorite athletes' performances. You can make a play with only $1 or go big. With their Pick'em game, you could win up to 1,000 times your money just by choosing higher or lower on player stats, like passing touchdowns, passing yards, touchdowns, three-pointers, double-doubles, etc. Now, if you're a bit of a nerd like me, it's the end of the best ball season, Hunter, and this season hasn't gone the way I wanted it to, but you can also get into the playoff best balls, which add a whole new wrinkle. So if you, like me, are only advancing about 10% of your teams, which last year you advanced 25%, and you saw a precipitous decline, your season's not over. That's the message to you. If you want to enter into the pick'ems, they're every single week. You've got different things like profit, boost, discounted, free picks, all of that. Just make sure, if you enter, you use promo code GOODKARMA. All right, it's time for a little bit of what we learned. And this one is a little bit of an interesting one, a little different approach to this. Hunter and I are going to combo this one together, and we're going to make it a little bit of a topic here. We saw just yesterday, last night, I believe it was late at night, that the New York Mets signed Juan Soto to a $765 million contract over 15 years. I saw a tweet here from Zach Scott, that's Zach Scott Sports. As Brewers GM / president, David Stearns spent $768 million on payroll over his entire tenure. He just committed $765 million to one dude. Now, this also comes on the heels of Willy Adames also signing a contract that takes him away from the Milwaukee Brewers. Ben Brust is looking at me. He already peeked his head in here, and now he's staring at me. I hate him. I wish he wasn't there right now. What I wanted to say here, Hunter, and it was something we talked about, was it felt defeating seeing Willy Adames go for probably a number that's too much, and there's probably wasn't a whole lot of other teams invested at that number themselves when it came to them. But knowing that the Milwaukee Brewers just have no shot of ever landing one of those big free agents, one of those premium players, that the Packers are going to have the Brewers are going to have to continue their process of development. Obviously, we're very excited about Jackson Chourio. The Packers got a screaming The Brewers got a screaming hot deal on it. The problem is, it feels like the Brewers are basically in a spot, and they've said it a lot, the bite at the apples thing, where they can get to the playoffs and they just got to get lucky, because they're not going to ever be able to compete with those guys at the top of the MLB.
Yeah, like, it's just the Willy Adames thing. Like, I was just kind of like, oh, that sucks. But like, I knew it was coming. Like, I had braced myself for it. Even in the middle of last year, I was like, okay, like, they may even trade him this year. Like, I get it. I know what's going to happen here. But seeing Juan Soto get that level of money, like, there's just no chance. I don't even think that Juan Soto's agent would have answered the Brewers' phone call. As soon as caller ID showed that it was a Milwaukee area code and they saw 414 pop up there, you know they just were ignoring it. Because there's no way the Brewers could even come close to the money that he was getting offered. And that just sucks. Like, it's just annoying. I really want baseball to go to a hard cap. Like, that's what I've learned. Like, it needs to happen at this point, because it's the only way to have any level of parity. Because as a Brewers fan now, I'm just like, okay, well, hopefully with having Jackson Chourio locked up for like the next 10 years at just a ridiculously team-friendly deal, maybe they strike gold with some pitching prospects, another infielder or something, and they can make a run like 2018. Like, that's what I've got to hope for. And it's just annoying. Like, I just want to, like, feel like, oh, the Brewers actually have a chance to compete and not just run into the buzzsaw that is the Dodgers and now the Mets.
Right. The Brewers have been, in terms of franchise building and player development, one of the best teams in the MLB at that. They've brought up homegrown talent. They've taken guys and sort of done reclamation projects on them. And the best we've seen is that one time they made it to the NLCS. After that, it is disappointment after disappointment. You could certainly point to underperformance from some of your stars, injuries, those things all play a factor. But when guys like Corbin Burns and Willie Adames and you name it continue to find opportunities elsewhere, it does sort of discourage you. I'm not going to stop being a Brewers fan. I'm not going to stop rooting for them. But I would like for them to be able to put their money where their mouth is. And sometimes you might have to overpay a little bit to keep your team together, be it with Corbin Burns or some of these other talented players that they've had, and hopefully make a run at something real here and not have us get all excited in September for it to be a short October.
Yeah, but it's so hard when I know what the other teams are offering. And like I've always said, like, you get offered $200 million by the Brewers. Like, what is $20 million extra dollars really doing for your life differently? But if I'm in that spot, I'm taking the extra $20 million. There's nothing different that I can buy. But, like, it's an extra $20 million. I want the extra $20 million. Like, I don't blame the guys for doing it. But it just sucks that that's just what's going to happen every time. Like, these teams can literally just say, okay, what are the Brewers offering you? We know we can add an extra $20 million on there. And then they're done because they won't be able to go above that. And it's just annoying because they can't do it for every single player. So the Brewers are just like, well, we won't do it for anybody then. We won't pay anyone at all. And it's just the reality of what we have to deal with as fans. And I've just kind of come accustomed to it, and I'm going to enjoy it while I can. I'm going to still cheer for them, and hopefully they can get a perfect game out of a pitcher and a playoff game and win a big game. And that's just what I got to do.
Well, that's a fun note to end on there.
Sorry.
I don't know if we were positive enough today, but it was Alex Stroh's birthday. He took the day off, so it's his fault.
He sucked all the positivity.
That's the conclusion I've come to.
I mean,
yeah, he took it. He took it with him.
I'm flying high over the Marquette win, which we didn't talk about at all. I'm feeling so good about that. Oh. I was so worried about it. Oh
his
man, they're
awful,
feeling final
his awful
four good.
Half shirt.
Oh, that was
his awful half shirt.
He got a ton of compliments from it. He said, like, a lot of people were like, "It's weird," but
said
I get
the same.
It. Yeah. So good for
him. I would like to disavow all those positive comments before he gets here on Wednesday and starts talking about how many people loved it. I didn't see any of those compliments with my eyes, so therefore I'm just frankly not going to believe them. All right, that'll do it for us this week. Well, this week, today. This has been Mr. Irrelevant.